How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
All right, welcome everybody to Locked On Lakers. I am your host, Harrison Fagan. I'm hosting tonight because we have great news on all fronts. Anthony is out. He is not part of this show. And the Lakers won. So those are pretty much the two best things that you can hear going into a podcast. But before we get into that, we want to remind you that, as always, you can find our full shows, Locked On Lakers, on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Today's Fast Break. That's right, Anthony. I got them all right. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Use the promo code LOLAKERS to get a $20 rebate on your first ticketing purchase. And SeatGeek is the best mobile application to buy tickets. I always love throwing that out there to remind you guys and to remind Gary, because Gary Kester, I am joined by Silver Screen and Roll's own. He is not always on the show, so you don't get to hear those SeatGeek promos all the time. So I just wanted to make sure that you know that even – like, if you ever leave Idaho to a place with that has, like, tickets to things, you need to buy tickets to those things. How are you doing, Gary?
Well, I was doing pretty good until all that heat you just launched my way, so that's a shot right to my pride.
Yeah, I apologize for slandering your entire state within 1 minute of starting the podcast, but I promise that's the last time I'm going to slander Idaho tonight, probably. Actually, no promises, but I'll do my best. But, you know, Gary, I brought you on tonight not just because I didn't want to talk to Anthony again after he ditched me for, I believe, four consecutive interviews last week with guests, but other than just wanting to get back at him, I wanted to bring you on because you and I have been talking a little bit about this kind of insane Lakers bench. And so, yes, the team went 0-2 against the Warriors last week, but the Warriors might end up being one of the best teams ever once they start to figure out all their stuff. And they seem to be trending that way. They certainly looked like it last Wednesday against the Lakers. But you and I have been talking about this superstar bench for the Lakers that has just come in and just massacred other teams' second units. And the Lakers won again tonight against Atlanta. They broke their losing streak. And the bench was a big reason why, I thought.
Yeah, no, it's kind of weird because the Lakers seem to, you know, get off to all these slow starts. But, you know, in years past, in the past couple of years, you would have kind of worried, like, oh, great. Like, you know, now we have to, you know, dig our way out of this and you know, try and climb back from a deficit. But it's like with this group, it's almost to be expected that they start slow. And then you don't really worry because the bench has been so good that you're like, oh, once the second unit gets in, like, we'll be fine. We'll get back in this thing. So they've been really, really reliable.
It's like the last couple of years, it's been like the starters will get down. And it's like, okay, well, let's see who we're sending in off the bench. All right, it's okay. It's Ronnie Price. It's West John. Oh, no, this escalated quickly. This is not going well. This is not going like I hoped. But this year, the bench comes in, and they come in against other second units, and they play and they just dominate them. You know, and you don't have to worry about that. That is interesting, and that you don't have to worry about the second unit coming in anymore. It's just that hasn't been the case the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, coming into the season, I expected the Lakers to be a relatively deep team, you know, to where their bench could have some good nights. Because, I mean, when you look at their roster, I thought they were just much deeper than especially the last 2 years. But the way that they've produced is just – I mean, it's unbelievable, really. I just didn't see them being consistently this good, you know, where they've been, I mean, they've been, you know, better than a lot of starting lineups in the league. And it's, yeah, it's just crazy.
Yeah. And it's like, they've been doing it against opposing benches, but it's not even just the success that they're having. It's how that they're having this success that makes them interesting, right? It's we all saw kind of this group going into the year, and we're like, all right, well, who's, if we're playing Lou Williams off the bench and Jordan Clarkson, and that's our backcourt, who's the point guard? And it turns out the answer to that is Brandon Ingram. And you know, you have like, you have your 6'9" going on 6'13" small forward playing point guard. You have Lou Williams playing like a per 36 minutes MVP candidate. you have Jordan Clarkson flashing to the basket at will. You have Larry Nance Jr. as kind of the glue guy that keeps it all together, and you have Tarik Black just kind of dunking everything in sight and protecting the rim, you know, at least adequately most nights. And the Lakers Outsiders account tweeted, I believe it was Grant Goldberg's Photoshop of the Lakers bench as the Guardians of the Galaxy. And it is kind of an apt parallel. It's just this group of weirdos who nobody necessarily wanted. Tarik Black went undrafted. Larry Nance Jr.'s, when he was drafted, it was almost universally panned. Jordan Clarkson slipped all the way in the draft. I think Lou Williams was even undrafted. And, okay, Brandon Ingram being the second overall pick kind of kills that a little bit. But, you know, I guess he's the one exception to that. But otherwise, all these guys are guys that other teams didn't want, didn't value. And they're coming in and they're playing as a reserve unit, as this fantastic reserve unit for the Lakers. And even Ingram, I guess he got passed over in favor of Ben Simmons. And, you know, regardless of draft stock, no one expected him to produce that much this year.
Well, the thing that I've really loved about Ingram is he's excelled in the areas that not really many people talked about in their draft evaluations of him. You know, I mean, in his 1 year at Duke, he was obviously – really good shooter, really good scorer, could score at an efficient rate. And obviously you had the physical attributes, you know, the height, the length, all that stuff. But what he's really excelled at, I think, is defensively and just kind of his feel for the game, his vision. He just always seems to be kind of in the right place at the right time. He gets the spots on the floor extremely well. And you know, he's basically done everything well but make shots, which, you know, naturally I think that's going to come in time because he takes good shots too. But I think that's the most encouraging thing is that kind of the stuff that you didn't really know about him because he was, you know, an 18-year-old freshman last year, you know, he's performed so well in so many different areas of the game that, you know, it's, I mean, you'd have to think that he's going to be really, really special.
Yeah, I don't think that – like, we've talked about it on this podcast before, but I don't know that it necessarily gets enough pub nationally because most national guys just kind of look at the scoring numbers for rookies, and that's how they dole out Rookie of the Year and accolades mm-hmm. and things like that. I just don't think that it gets talked about enough how rare it is for someone to be a plus defensive player in their rookie year. And he's not only a plus defensive player, he's arguably, like, what, the Lakers' third-best defensive player?
He might be their best perimeter defender.
He's definitely their best perimeter defender. Yeah. And then, like, overall, I think I'd only have him behind Nance Jr. and then maybe Mozgov, just kind of depending on the night and the matchup. Yeah. But other than that, he's been the Lakers' best perimeter defender. It hasn't been Nick Young. It hasn't been Jordan Clarkson, despite all that talk in camp to kind of pump them up and get them to keep playing defense. And that's not to disparage their defense. Their defense has been good. But Brandon Ingram has been legitimately great on that end. And it's really encouraging to see, even if his scoring is not coming around. And the scoring, I think it's, like you said, he's taking good shots. I haven't went back and looked through the tape from tonight against the Hawks yet. But again, he went, I believe, what, like 3 of 10, I think? He went, yes, 3 of 10 against the Hawks. Mm-hmm. And the other night against the Warriors, he went, I think, 3 of 18. So, hey, technically that's improvement. And but he took a bunch of his shots at the rim, and he seems to just be having issues finishing. And it sometimes it's not knowing necessarily the right move to finish with.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not getting a call because he's a 19-year-old rookie, and sometimes it's a combination of that, and he's just not really strong enough yet to finish through guys at the rim. And I think things are going to start to come around.
Yeah, and that's the thing with him is that, you know, kind of the flaws, I guess, in his game right now are just kind of based on his youth and his inexperience, you know. I think he's never going to be like, you know, a physically dominant player like LeBron James who can just barrel his way to the rim. But, you know, naturally his body's going to fill out as he grows older and as he, you know, spends more time in the weight room, and he's going to just learn how to use it better. He's already really good at using his length, especially on defense, because there's been times when guys try and back him down in the post, or they try and just drive right at his chest and kind of knock him off balance. But he does a pretty good job of still staying gathered and just using that length to really alter shots or block shots. And you know, I think he does a really good job with it on that end. I think on offense, he's still kind of learning how to use it at this level, just because the game's a lot faster, it's a lot more physical, and guys are just better. You know, they just time kind of defensive plays better. But, you know, those things are going to come with time. You know, he's just got to keep getting the minutes, the experience, and, you know, there's just going to come a time where it kind of starts to naturally fall in place, and he starts converting on those plays that he attacks the basket.
Yeah, and the stuff that you mentioned on defense, though, he's able to still affect shots even when guys just totally overpower him and knock him off of his spot, because his arms, like, I don't think that he has elastic powers, but if it came out, like if video came out where people saw his arm actually extending on a play, I wouldn't even be surprised. Like Michael Jordan on the final dunk of Space Jam. I think he probably has that in his arsenal. He's just got to learn to use it over the summer.
Brandon Ingram secretly from Looney Tune Land.
Yeah, I think Brandon Ingram is based on Michael Jordan's character in Space Jam. At least his arms are. It's insane. His wingspan is insane.
There's been plays where like he'll grab a rebound and the ball's like near the top of the backboard level. Like, it's just insane what his length allows him to do.
I still remember that play, that game against the Warriors, when he reached around a screen and tipped a pass coming to the guy that the screen successfully got him off of the guy that it was trying to free up, but his arm still got around and blocked the pass. Like, it's cartoonish and it's hilarious. And it allows him to, like, on his jumpers, he's able to get it off over anyone. And so I think that it's going that high release point. Once his shot starts to fall a little bit more consistently, and all evidence points towards that happening, he's going to be special. I'm convinced he's going to be really, really good.
And when it comes to rookies and young players, it was kind of the same thing with D'Angelo Russell last year. Cause I mean, his shooting efficiency wasn't anything spectacular. I mean, at times it was, but I mean, overall it was, you know, kind of up and down all year. But what I look at a lot of the time with rookies, especially guys that are one and done players, you know, coming to the league at the age of 19, I like to try and kind of see, you know, are they able to get to spots offensively that are, you know, effective for them? You know, are they, you know, consistently bumped off their spots and having to, you know, do they just kind of look uncomfortable, you know, when they're trying to score? And with Russell and with Ingram, it's kind of the same thing. I think they do a good job of getting to spots on the floor that they're comfortable taking shots. You know, Ingram had a number of shots today that were really good looks that just didn't go. And, you know, he seems to do a really good job of that, of taking good shots and getting to spots on the floor that you know that he can make shots. It's just a matter of time before those finally start to fall.
Yeah, I think so. So with that being said, do you think he's going to be better than Kevin Durant or the best player in NBA history?
I mean, I thought he's already better than Durant. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we saw it against the Warriors. Only one of them shot 18 times. I think just the ability to get those shots is pretty special in and of itself. So I don't know. You'd be like, I'm not. That's just math that we're pointing out, I think. So. But anyway, let's get past the league's MVP so far this year and talk about I wanted to talk about Larry Nance Jr. a little bit, because I think that he just he is really underappreciated, I think, by a lot of people. And it's almost become chic to say that. And I think that we should talk about why he's so underappreciated specifically. But what is he doing that's so valuable that maybe some more casual fans or people who don't really watch the Lakers might not notice?
He just kind of does a little bit of everything, really. You know, he's a really smart player. I mean, you kind of expect that a little bit from a guy that, you know, went to school for 4 years. You know, he graduated at Wyoming. But I mean, he uses his athleticism so well that he can play the four or the five. And, you know, sometimes when he switches out to perimeter players, you know, he can defend some of those guys really well, you know, as well. And, you know, he just, like I said, he just does a little bit of everything. He's a pretty good passer. He kind of sees the floor well. He's unselfish. Sometimes I wish he would shoot the ball a little bit more. He seems to pass
up. Or at least a little bit more confidently. Just just go right up with it rather than wait a second and decide. Like, you can see the gears turning in his head where he's like, wait, is it, he still has, like, that scarring from last year's coach a little bit where it's like, wait, hold on. Is this a bad shot? Am I going to get benched?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. And that's like the only kind of issue that I've had with him is that, you know, there's times where he has a wide open 15 footer and yeah, he kind of looks to pass first when nobody's open. It's like, Larry, there's, you know, there's a reason you're open because everybody else is covered. So, you know, to take the shot, but no, like I said, just does a little bit of everything. He's really effective defensively. When the Lakers get out and run, I think, you know, obviously his dunks are a lot of fun, but just kind of those plays that he's able to make in transition, you know, sometimes those can be big momentum boosters and really start the Lakers off on a run and things like that. So his constant energy and his defensive prowess, I think, is just consistent enough to where he's always making an impact on the game.
Yeah, and his individual, I'm not looking at these numbers right now, but his individual defensive rebounding numbers aren't amazing, if memory serves. But he does such a good job just making sure that his guy doesn't get the board. It's that old cliche of the team probably rebounds better, I would imagine, while he's on the floor rather than when he's not.
Yeah, no, and he does a good job of kind of just getting in there and keeping the ball alive, even though it might not show up in the stat sheet. You know, there's just a number of plays where he seems to be in the right place at the right time, especially when it comes to being on the glass. You know, like you said, his rebounding numbers aren't, you know, I mean, like what Randall was last year. Randall was like one of the top rebounders in the league.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I always love that. That's always funny when that gets brought up, because Randall, he absolutely deserves credit, but he did have it a little bit easier in that Roy Hibbert, I think, doesn't necessarily know what a rebound is.
Well, it's hard to rebound when you're sitting on the
that's
floor.
That's true. He would fall. Yeah, that's true. He would get knocked down a lot. So,
yeah. but Nance is, and that goes back to just the energy that he brings that I was talking about. It's like that consistent energy. I mean, it just creates extra possessions at times. It just creates good things. You know, that's why I think coaches love those type of players, because they do a lot of things that don't show up in the stat sheet. And, you know, they just do a lot of things that teams need to help you win games.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And, you know, it's been the bench as a whole. But I think those two guys really stood out to me against the Hawks. And the other guy, obviously, Nick Young, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. Anthony and I have, at least, continued his career resurrection, 6 of 12 from the field, led the Lakers. Clarkson passed him in scoring by the end of it. But Nick Young had 17 points tonight and, you know, just continued to his kind of fantasy season, basically. I mean, no one expected this from him. Yeah, I know you probably didn't, but just talk about what you've seen from Nick Young. We haven't had you on in a while.
I mean, he's honestly disappointed me. I expected 25 per game from Nick Young this year.
Oh, well, and then.
No, you know, there was always, you know, I mean,
I should have hung up on you for that. I mean, I'm not just going to let that slide.
No, everybody, you know, kind of expected, I mean, because there was a lot of reports that, you know, the Lakers were going to try and trade him, and if they couldn't find anybody to trade him to, they were just going to let him go. And so it was really surprising when they kept him, but I think there was always at least a glimmer of hope, just, you know, being in a new offensive system. And I think we thought the same thing with a lot of players, that, you know, just getting out of whatever they ran last year, the train wreck of an offense they had last year.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we want to call that an offense. I think that was like a general plan of get Kobe the ball.
They were like pickup games, yeah. And then you got that one dude that's always calling for the ball. But, no, I think just being in a new offensive system, you know, has helped a number of players. You know, but Nick Young, I don't know. He seems to be a guy that, you know, he just – if you get him some good looks – all it takes for him is to make one shot, and then all of a sudden his confidence is just through the roof. And, you know, I think they've generated a lot of good looks for him this year, you know, as opposed to last year or just under Byron Scott in general. It was just a lot of one-on-one. It was a lot of iso ball, not really creating good looks for him. Because we saw under the 1 year with Mike D'Antoni, I mean, that was honestly one of his best offensive seasons.
Arguably his – I think it was his best until this year.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean, and it was all, I think – you know, obviously he made shots, but I think it was a product of the offense as well. And this offense has some similarities with that creates good looks for him. And yeah, I mean, his confidence is sky high right now. And I mean, you can see it, like even when he, you know, he struggles, I mean, he's still trying on defense and, you know, there's times where he does a good job there, but he just seems to be in a really good groove offensively.
Yeah, I agree. Two more guys I wanted to touch on before we move on to viewer questions tonight. Thomas Robinson, what did you think of him in his first start?
I like when they don't run the offense through him, but I love I love when – I
mean, Major
I
just love key.
His, yeah, I love his energy and his effort. You know, he's kind of – I mean, him and Tarik Black are so similar when it comes to that. I think Tarik's probably a little bit – I want to say he's a better defender, at least from what I've seen this year. But I mean, Robinson, like I said, they're kind of the same player. They constantly work hard. They play really hard. There's a lot of energy. They do a good job on the boards, even though they're probably both a bit undersized for their position. And he's got just kind of a mean streak to him. I think Byron Scott would have loved him, but
he's Tarik Black's evil twin.
Yeah, pretty much, but no, he kind of fits that personality of the bench. You know, the bench comes in and it just seems like the whole energy in the building, you know, just kind of lifts to another level because the bench just has a ton of high energy guys. And, you know, he's one of them, even though he started tonight, but that's just kind of how he is. That motor is just constant.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you about them. They should not run the offense through him. They should not be having him do any dribble drives. But I just thought that he brought, you know, it's cliche to say about energy guys, but he brought kind of a boost of energy to the starters. And he was clearly trying to do it. He got a dunk on the break to cut the lead to cut the deficit to 4 in the first quarter, and he started screaming and pounding his chest. And it was like the most transparent, like, I'm out here excited, you guys should get excited too, that I've ever seen. And it's exactly what they need from him. That's what he should be doing when he's out there.
Yeah, no, and that's what I mean with, like, kind of the mean streak to him. Like, when he did that, I was just like, I just remember looking at him, I was like, man, I would not want to run into that dude in an alleyway. Like, he just looks like a mean dude. He's just physically empowering. You know, and he's just kind of a physically gifted person because he's so big, he's so strong, and the athleticism that he has with it is I mean, it's pretty unique. You know, obviously, you'd like to see him be able to round out some of his offensive skills a little more. But, you know, certainly what he brings to the table has a lot of value in itself.
And I was, again, I think both of us, I can safely speak for and say that we were shocked when he got the start tonight. But I think that almost speaks just as much to how good that bench unit has been. Just to bring this full circle, that there aren't a lot of coaches that would be so desperate to keep their bench unit together that they would start guys like Jose Calderon and Thomas Robinson and really leave the first unit without much of a playmaker, unless you count Nick Young, who I guess we kind of have to count at this point. But that bench unit has been so good, and they rewarded Luke tonight. Yeah, every single bench player who played – so everyone but Marcelo Huertas, pour one out for the Catalyst. But every single bench player who played was a double digits plus in the plus minus. You had Larry Nance Jr. plus 25, Brandon Ingram plus 12, Tarik Black plus 27, Jose or Jordan Clarkson plus 22, and Lou Williams plus 25. And again, plus minus isn't the most indicative stat, but it does say something that all those guys were huge pluses. And all of the starters were negatives in terms of plus minus.
Well, and that was the thing. As soon as, you know, the second unit came in, I mean, because the first quarter was kind of a nightmare for the Lakers. They couldn't really get stops. The Hawks were getting a lot of wide open looks. You know, defensively, it was just really bad. And then, you know, when they got that second unit in and really starting from the second quarter on, it just, like, it raised the intensity level of the team, I think, on both ends. And they just kind of started to figure it out, and like they dominated the second quarter. And then, you know, the Hawks made some runs here and there. They made some pushes, but I mean, honestly, the Lakers kind of controlled that game for three quarters. Once the second unit came in, it seemed it was a completely different game after that.
Yeah, they were real game changers tonight. So the last guy I wanted to – we got sidetracked, went back to the bench there, but I thought that that was worth talking about. But the last guy that I wanted to mention tonight, I think, is – I joked and said that Brandon Ingram was the MVP of tonight, but I think really you have to give the MVP to Timofey Mozgov. You know, went out there, he got hit in the face again against the Golden State Warriors on Sunday, and the Lakers are now either 3-0 or 4-0 in games after Timofey Mozgov. Mozgov gets hit. So, Gary, I mean, number one, what do you think it is about Timo that is constantly getting him hit in the face? And number two, why do you think that that's led to so many Laker wins?
Yeah, I'll be able to find something with a direct correlation here.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I bring you on for.
Every center has to have some kind of trademark. With Roy Hibbert, it was he has to constantly fall to the ground. And with Timofey, you just got to get hit in the face. You just got to take one for the team every now and then. And, you know, the Lakers were struggling. And I guess, you know, once they see him get hit in the face, it's like seeing one of your brothers get hit. And it's like all of a sudden the Lakers get defensive and they just go after Arter or something.
It takes until the next game, though. Yeah. They realize they're like, oh, wait, Timo got hit last game. Let's not let them that tonight. Well, let's out physical them.
First, you have to console him, and then you pounce in the next game.
Okay, so no, but actually, okay, so I like this. The every Lakers center has a signature. So for Hibbert, it's falling down. For Mozgov, it's getting hit in the face. You know, let's run through this a little bit. For Dwight, I think it's walking around showing a stat sheet to his teammates.
For Bynum, it was the pull up transition threes.
Yeah, for Bynum, it was that, or just his knowledge of where banks were in every city. And I think for Shaq, I don't know what would you say Shaq's is if you when you picture Shaq, what is it?
Oh man,
I think it's just dunking on it's that dunk that he had. I forget the name of the center off the top of my head, but where he just knocked him to the ground, pointed at him with both fingers, and then ran back up the court. That's one of the most underrated dunks of all time. Like Shaq would Shaq, I think it's just overpowering guys. It's being close enough to the rim that he can just turn and dunk on you.
That was the thing with Shaq, is that you could play amazing defense. Hell, you could have three guys just jump on top of him and he would still dunk it. And he would just put you through the rim.
All right, so let's get into some viewer questions now. I think now that we sorted out, we finally figured out why the Lakers are so good after Timo gets hit in the face. I think my favorite quote from any guest of this podcast ever was when Jordan Clarkson told me that happens all the time in practice too, and that D'Angelo Russell had just hit him in the face with a ball that morning. So like the Lakers figured out this stat, and they're just trying to catalyze it themselves. They're just like fine. Like I imagine practice is just like dodgeball for Timo at this point.
See, if they're ever in a game that's just completely out of reach in the fourth quarter, they just got to put Timo out there and say, Timo, go get hit in the face so we can win the next game.
Luke Walton, we need to make sure that Luke Walton doesn't figure out this stat, because otherwise he's going to be like that guy from Dodgeball that's just going to be like, hey, Timo, if you can dodge a wrench, we can win it. We can't win a game. He just starts throwing wrenches at him around the practice.
You're going to have Timo show up to a game just with both eyes super swollen, and he's just black and blue.
Yeah, he's like, Luke, figure it out, stats. Anyway, so we'll get to some viewer questions now. We got one about free agent targets. I don't want to talk about free agency. The team's still good. Like, it's not like they have one win in November again, where, you know, we could talk about things that are actually related to this team right now. So I think Dangerous at Fire, I can't say your name on this podcast because I will get fined. But Dangerous on Twitter says, who has stepped up the most filling in for the injured guys? Gary, who would you say has stepped up the most? Because the fact that we haven't talked about Julius Randle or D'Angelo Russell at all during this podcast really shows you how well the team at least played tonight in their absence. I mean, the Lakers probably would have gotten roasted by the Warriors either way. Those last two games, the Warriors looked determined to prove a point.
Yeah.
But who do you think has stepped up the most in the absence of those two guys?
This is a really good question, because I don't think there's an obvious answer to it. You know, there's a few guys that you can make a really strong case for. I'm going to say Lou Williams, just because I think, I mean, really, he stepped up all season. I think, honestly, if the season ended today, I think he would win. I think he would win Sixth Man of the Year, or he'd at least be one of the, you know, few candidates for it. I mean, he's just played really, really exceptional basketball, I mean, since the season started, and it was something that we didn't really see coming. You know, he's been a lot more efficient, and he just seems to be he's a consistent spark plug off the bench that he just comes out and he's able to just fill it up, whether it's getting to the free throw line or hitting threes, spacing the floor, and he's done a good job creating this year. And I think that's why another reason why the bench has been so good. I know we've talked about the bench a lot, but they have a lot of playmakers, a lot of guys that can create not only for themselves but create for others. And I think Lou certainly has fit that category and played really, really well this year.
And how weird is it to say that about Lou Williams, that he can make plays for others? But he's actually done it this year. He loves throwing. He has fallen in love with the lob pass. I think somebody, mm-hmm. like, he finally this year learned how much fun that is, because there's actually space to throw them. He yeah. wasn't just asked to only come in and isolate for 10 minutes until the starters came back.
Yeah. Well, and that's been a big thing with the Lakers offense, is just having effective guys, guys that can effectively run the pick and roll, like big guys. You know, with Hibbert, you couldn't count on it because you didn't know if he was going to, you know, be standing near the rim by the time he got there, or if he was just going to be sliding on his butt, you know.
Or just pop out for a pick and pop jumper that I think went in twice last year.
Yeah. but with like Mozgov and Tarik Black and even Randall and Nance, like those are guys that defenses actually have to really, you know, rotate over to when they dive to the basket, especially Nance, because you can just throw it up anywhere near the hoop and he'll go get it. So,
and even when they don't, they have that easy pocket pass available to them that mm-hmm. Randall and Nance have been so good about using, that 4-on-3, a lot like Draymond Green does. Maybe not with the same efficiency that Draymond Green does, but mm-hmm. they've been using them in a similar way out of that pick and pop.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about, you know, Nick Young and Lou Williams, you know, guys on the perimeter, but I think you got to look at the big guys and, I mean, just – you know, kind of their role, because the Lakers have run a lot of pick and roll action, and you know the solid screens that they've set, and like I said, just their effectiveness to be able to dive to the basket, or you know, even step out and actually catch and shoot from 15 feet, because they've got a number of big guys that are actually capable of doing that. So I think just the big guys, even though, you know, sometimes it doesn't obviously show up in the stat sheet, that I think they're helping create a lot of space on offense.
Yeah, I think so too. And you gave the serious answer, so I'm gonna default to my normal and just go sarcasm and say I think it's been Timofey Mozgov. I think his blow to the face last game really keyed this Lakers run tonight. So shout outs to Timo. Timo seems like a great dude. I don't want to sound like I'm making fun of him. I just think it's the most hilarious stat I've ever seen. And you know, hey, as long as it's working, I can't blame the Lakers for rolling with it.
You can't – there's always going to be stats that you would think would be overlooked, but people just catch everything now.
Yeah. I mean, hey, the Locked On Lakers had it first. Must credit us. So we got this one from @RedBean107, who asks, is Randall putting his career on the line by injuring himself? So, like, that seems, I would say, more like a question for Anthony, because he's the one that decides when Randall's putting his career on the line by doing things like not playing in summer league and, you know, mainly just that. But so we'll ask that one to Anthony when he gets back tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah.
So we have this one from @LakersBR 16 times. So just reminding anyone that forgot that the Lakers have won 16 championships. That is second most in NBA history, but we don't acknowledge the name of that other team on this podcast. Yeah. And so realistic survival guide through 2016. So the team can reach 17 with playoff hope. Gary, what does the team have to do this upcoming month of December to – yeah, because their next game is in December, I think. Yeah. No, it's not. I am looking at a calendar. This is riveting radio. Okay, so they got one more game in November, but after that, what do the Lakers have to do to survive the rest of this year and get into 2017 with playoff hopes?
I think the key thing for them is beating the teams that they should beat. And it feels weird saying that about a team, you know, that we've seen be at the bottom.
The 117 games last year.
Yeah, be at the bottom of the league for a couple of years now. But, you know, when they go up against the Philadelphia 76ers or the Phoenix Suns, like, those are the types of games that now they've got to win consistently, because those are the ways, I mean, you rack up wins. I think it was the Rockets either – I think maybe 2 years ago or last year, one of these recent years, they really struggled against all the other West playoff teams, but they beat the teams that were in the lottery. Like, they were just consistently beating all of them and racked up a ton of wins that way. And the Lakers are capable, obviously, when they're fully healthy, especially, of beating some of these top teams. You know, we saw them beat the Warriors. They beat the Hawks
never forget
twice. And, you know, they hung with the Spurs. So, I mean, I think the key, though, is consistently winning the games that you're supposed to win. Like, you look back at, like, the Dallas loss now, and that's one that sticks out. It's like, that's one you'd want to have back. But no, and especially if they can win home games, because they've been pretty good at home this year. And, you know, if they can get 25, I'd say if they can get 25 wins at home and go 25-16, you know, that's pretty good. You might have to do better than that to make the playoffs in the West. You never know. But, you know, if they can be a really good home team and beat the teams that they're supposed to beat consistently, I think, yeah, then you can probably think they would at least have a shot at maybe the 7 or 8 seed.
And then, so I think let's go through the kind of upcoming calendar a little bit. So on Tuesday, they play the Pelicans as part of the first game in a 4-5 night stretch. And the Pelicans are terrible, but they have Anthony Davis. And
they've been good lately, though.
Yeah, and the Lakers are on the road. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, they weren't that good tonight. Alvin Gentry's press conference apparently consisted of him saying, "We got outplayed multiple times," and then ending it. But so that's, you know, maybe not great for them. But, hey, they're the spin zone. They're going to be motivated going into this game on Tuesday. And so they're at home. The Lakers are on the road. This is a young team. You can't necessarily chalk that one up as a win just yet, but that is a winnable game. Then the next night they play the Bulls on the road again. They just got beat by the Bulls. It's the second game in 2 days. That's going to on the road. That's going to be tough. And then they get a day off on Thursday before going Friday against the Raptors, who are good and better than the Lakers. And then Saturday against the Memphis Grizzlies for, again, the fourth game in 5 nights. So that's a tough stretch. And but after that, they play the Jazz and the Rockets. And so those are two good teams. The Lakers may not be able to win those. But then they have a 5-game stretch against the Suns, Knicks, Kings, Nets, and Sixers, which, I mean, if the Lakers want to stay in playoff contention, that has to be 4-1.
Right. That's exactly what I was just thinking, was that you got to win at least 4 of those 5. Because we saw kind of the – I think it was a 6-game stretch after their first 6 games where they had a lot of winnable games. And I think they went, I want to say, 4-2. And, you know, I mean, that's good. You know, they've got to – like, that's kind of what they have to do against those teams that they can definitely beat, you know, where they don't necessarily have to play their best. Where, like, if they play San Antonio, they've got to bring their A game if they want any chance to win. But, you know, they can make mistakes against some of those teams and still win, just based on, you know, kind of the talent that they have this year and the depth. But yeah, no, this stretch that they're on in their schedule is really, really tough. So, I mean, if they can kind of survive that and then start to beat up on some of these teams that they should beat, you know, it's gonna say a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And then so after that, they play – and so the Kings, Nets, and Sixers are all on the road. And then they go on the road and they play the Cavs. I'm just going to say that's a loss. LeBron always destroys the Lakers. And he, you know, maybe without Kobe there, he won't be as motivated too. But I'm not convinced that is a winnable game unless the Sixers hit Timo in the face on Friday, the game before. Otherwise, then it's guaranteed. But otherwise, I think I'm not willing to say that's a winnable game for the Lakers. Then they play the Hornets and the Heat and the Magic all on the road. The Hornets and the Heat are okay. The Magic are really bad. The Magic should definitely be a winnable game, but it is the last game of a long road trip. So Who knows? Weird stuff can happen there. Yeah. And then they come home to play. They open up their Christmas present, and it's the Clippers. So that's not great. Yeah. And that's essentially the schedule maker's equivalent of giving you a bag of coal. And then they play the Jazz and the Mavs to close out the month. And the Mavs should definitely be a winnable game. The Lakers lost the first game to the Mavs because they played terrible and Harrison Barnes went off. But the Mavs are really bad. That should be a winnable game.
Yeah, no, there's a few, obviously, you know, a handful of winnable games in that stretch. And you kind of hope that they can start to string together some wins and really just kind of get better as the season goes along. You know, I know Anthony had talked about, I think the last time we're on, kind of how they would adjust to teams, you know, kind of being able to scout them better, having, you know, them on film, seeing kind of some of the things that they run, some player tendencies and stuff like that, and kind of how the Lakers would react. So that's going to be a big part of it. But, you know, if they can keep, like I said, they keep stringing these wins together and just kind of keep improving, keep getting better, you know, then that's going to help really rack up those wins.
Yeah, I think so too, 100%. And so, we went through the schedule. I think there's a chance the Lakers could maybe still kind of be in the hunt. I'm still not willing to call them a playoff contender yet. I think we have to see how they do on the rest of this next, like, 4-game and 5-night stretch. I think, because that could potentially really be not a death blow for their playoff chances, but that could be, like, really harmful. That one could hurt. And again, the thing that we're overlooking here, not talking about, is they have to get Russell and Randle back. As good as the bench has been, they need playmakers in that starting lineup. They aren't going to be able to survive against every team without Russell and Randle out there. And you really saw that. The Warriors, again, are a really good team. They probably would have beaten the Lakers anyway. But those starters just, like, they could get nothing going against the Warriors. And, you know, you just need some playmakers out there. And that's what Russell and Randle are. They can go and get their own shot, and they can create a shot for someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. If they're not able to get healthy and stay healthy, I mean, I think the playoffs is kind of one of the last things we should think about, just because especially with Russell and Randle, because as you said, those are the two best playmakers that they have in that starting lineup.
Arguably their two best players overall.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact they were able to get a win tonight, I think, was huge against a good Hawks team that for some reason the Lakers seem to play really well against. I don't know why, but you've got to get those. Ben,
man. He's really mad still at the Hawks for trading him.
Well, we had to give a loss to all the former Lakers, you know, with Bazemore and Dwight Howard and Ryan Kelly even is over there. So
yeah, the Hawks really erred by not letting Ryan Kelly have his revenge game.
That was my worst nightmare.
Looking forward to the Ryan Kelly revenge game.
My worst nightmare was Ryan Kelly hitting a three at the buzzer to win the game.
No, hey, a dunk. You know how Ryan Kelly does at the buzzer. He showed us in the preseason last year. He takes it to the hole, man. All right. This was a lot of fun. Gary, I really appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your ability to not be Anthony. And thank you for bringing us your insight, and I hope to have you back on throughout the season.
That's the best compliment I think I've gotten.
Yeah, you put it on put it on LinkedIn. I'll endorse it. Not being Anthony Irwin.
There we go.
All right. As always, you can find Locked On Lakers on iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Audio Boom, TuneIn, and I think I said Stitcher already, but this is why Anthony does these. Use the promo code LOLakers to get a $20 rebate on your first ticketing purchase at SeatGeek, the best and easiest mobile application to buy and sell your tickets. And we will talk to everybody tomorrow. I believe Anthony will be back, and I believe we may have a guest with both of us, although we'll see if Anthony ends up blocking me from another interview. Thanks for listening, everyone.